The EP Podcast, heard everywhere podcasts can be found, and always at theeppodcast.com.
And welcome into another week of the EP Podcast. My name is Chris Lanuti. I'm one of your neighbors, and I'm doing a podcast each and every week here in Evergreen Park. In fact, I've been doing it. We're coming up on 6 years. If you ever want to reach out and talk about anything, you got something like a hot tip, maybe you have a question for Mayor Kelly Burke, who will be on this show in just a couple of weeks, you can reach out, ask your questions, and tell me anything at theeppodcast.com. You can leave a voice message. You can type your message and send it to me. You got an idea for a guest. You got a topic that you want covered. I'm here for you. As I mentioned, the mayor is going to be on this show in a couple of weeks. Get your questions in. I'll try to get to as many of them as possible. The Village of Evergreen Park has set up a brand new service, and the head of the company that will be bringing composting to each and every resident of Evergreen Park, if they're interested in it, is on this program. It's all brought to you by the First National Bank of Evergreen Park. They invest in the Evergreen Park community because they love this area as much as you do. Plus, their total access checking account gives you free ATMs nationwide and a $300 bonus with qualifying activities. The mobile banking tools are super easy. They revamped them recently. I have a business account there. I have a personal account there. I have all the kids' accounts there. I am constantly moving money in small and big denominations. And the ability to transfer within the bank and with other banks with the click of a button helps me out a lot. Start banking locally today. Get over and see them in that iconic building on the corner of 95th and Pulaski, the First National Bank of Evergreen Park, member FDIC. Joining me on the phone line right now, we have a brand new service coming to Evergreen Park from a company called Waste Not, who has an agreement now with the village, and Liam Donnelly is the founder and CEO of Waste Not. From one small business owner to another, welcome to the EP Podcast. Liam, how are you?
Doing very well. Thanks so much for having me, Chris.
So tell me, first of all, a little bit about your company before we dive into the agreement with the village and how residents can utilize your services. Where do you come up with this idea? I have a neighbor next door that I know does composting. They have an area there. They seem to throw a bunch of different things in there. They're using, I think, the plant. They've got a big giant garden. That's about the complete spectrum of my knowledge on it. So how do you get into it, first of all, and then decide you want to start a company?
Well, to be honest, my understanding of composting wasn't much different than yours when I started Waste Not. I had grown up composting in the Lincoln Square neighborhood of Chicago. My parents were composting before I was born, and I didn't really have a choice but to do it growing up. In fact, it was one of my chores that I shared with my three brothers. And to be honest, I kind of thought everybody did it. But I got into food service when I was 14 and realized that, no, most people don't do it, and restaurants especially don't do it at the time. So this was back in 2013. And the business actually began by chance. I was taking coffee grounds home from the cafe I worked at, and did that for several months, and the manager offered to start paying me to do what I was already doing, which was pretty cool. But in 2015, as I was graduating high school, a classmate, now co-founder, Lauren, pointed out that she wanted to compost at her condo, but didn't have the space, really didn't want to do the dirty work or the heavy lifting, and kind of identified that there were a lot of people out there that want to compost, but they're too afraid of the smell or rodents, or they just don't have the time or space to do it on their own. And that's when Waste Not was really born, on the residential side.
Okay, so the idea behind composting is any kind of organic matter, from what I understand. So you could do everything from food scraps to even leaves, and somehow this turns into fertilizer that people use for planting. So rather than throw a bunch of stuff in the garbage, it's essentially another way of doing recycling. And right there, I think you kind of, you touched on a few things that I always am concerned about when it comes to compost, the smell and the amount of dirty work that I have to do. So how do you handle that at Waste Not?
Oh, I'm going to start with that, and then I'm going to touch on a few things that you just mentioned. So when we say we take the dirty work and heavy lifting out of composting, we mean it. We provide our residential participants with a clean, sanitized 5-gallon pail with an airtight lid. Because we're industrially composting it, we're able to accept all food waste, including meat scraps, bones, solid dairy, and baked goods. All that can go into this 5-gallon pail with that airtight lid to reduce smell and limit pests. And then either every week or every other week, depending on the service level, those participants, they set their pail out on their front porch or at the end of their driveway, and we come by and we swap it out with another clean, sanitized pail. We take their full dirty one and we do all the composting behind the scenes. But one of the things that you mentioned, most people that have an idea of composting, even a limited idea, they think about that backyard composting where you aren't able to do meat scraps. You're not able to do bone. You're not able to do baked goods or dairy. And that's because the piles are just a bit too small. The center mass doesn't get hot enough. And trust me, the rats and raccoons, they'll find that material before it has a chance to break down. We're doing the same style of composting that's done in the backyard, but just on a much larger scale. So the center of that pile is hotter, it's larger, and it allows us to break down those protein-heavy goods faster. And that's really one of the secret sauces of composting with Waste Not for Student on Your Own, is the fact that not only are you avoiding that dirty work and heavy lifting, you're also able to compost more, all of your food waste. You can essentially scrape your plate into the bucket, and you're probably doing it right.
All right, so Waste Not Compost is now Evergreen Park's official curbside compost collection partner, okay? They have a franchise agreement with Waste Not. Village Board approved this, and it's a service that's going to be available to residents. So the way that this sounds is that there's going to be a bunch of things that I can throw inside of a bucket. I can seal the bucket up. You're going to take the bucket, and then you're going to give me a new bucket. So first off, are there relatively easy instructions as to what I can and cannot put into the bucket? And secondly, who's getting all the compost that you're making? Does that eventually make it back, or is this just another way? Is this similar to my recycling can, where I'm just getting rid of it, but I'm getting rid of it in a more environmentally conscious way?
All right, Chris, you've got great questions here. I'm going to try to tackle them all. I'm going to start with the finished compost, because I fell in love composting growing up without knowing the science. All right. My understanding was that my parents' coffee grounds, eggshells, and food scraps were turning into compost in the backyard. And it was all kind of magic to me, but I saw this nutrient-rich black gold, as they call it. And I thought that was pretty cool because I knew what I had put into the composter. So to make sure that our participants can really understand how cool of a process composting is, we do compost distribution every spring and fall where our members get compost back for free. So they get connected with the compost that is created from their food waste every spring and fall if they want it. It's not required. We deliver that to the doorstep along with their service. I think you hit on another great point, which is this just another form of recycling? And do you only compost if you want that compost back? And this is my confession here. I'm not the best gardener. I kill most of the plants I grow, and I'm not composting for that finished compost, that nutrient-rich soil amendment. I compost to keep food waste out of landfills. I discovered in high school that food waste in landfills produces methane. Landfills are the third largest emitter of methane in the U.S. And that's a greenhouse gas that is more potent than carbon dioxide. But I think it's a lot easier to teach people to throw food waste in a different colored bin than it is to convince them to stop driving, take public transit, start walking and biking. It's a simple daily habit change that can lead to a massive impact, starving food waste from landfills and reducing those methane emissions.
All right. So this is, first of all, a very environmentally conscious thing to do if somebody wants to go about doing it. And then there's also the perk of if you do like the plant and you do want some compost, you're getting back the compost that you're creating. Now, this is not something like our garbage service, from what I understand, that is already in the package. This is like an add-on feature. So take me through if somebody wants to do this now. I believe it's launching around Earth Day this month, correct? Can you give me kind of an idea of when this starts and how people get involved if they want to do it?
Absolutely. So beginning on Monday, April 15th, Evergreen Park residents can visit our domain at evergreenparkcompost.com. It's an opt-in service. You're not required to compost if you don't want to. But if you have interest in doing it, you can visit that domain. It'll take you to a sign-up form where you enter your address and payment details, and you select whether or not you'd like that container picked up every week or our most popular, which is every other week. And then on the launch of service, which is just around Earth Day, you're right, a fresh brand new bucket will be delivered to your doorstep for you to begin composting. And the process continues year round. So we're able to pick up the food scraps, whether it's snowing or 100 degrees.
How heavy are the buckets? Like, how bad do they get? I think that's the first thing I'm thinking of. Like, I have a, you know, I'm getting a little older. My back bothers me a lot. I mean, I can make the 16-year-old drag it out to the curb, but not everybody has a 16-year-old boy that can drag something out to the curb. So you know, I know we have older residents. I'm sure they're thinking to themselves, how big is this bucket? How heavy does this get? And is this going to be similar to me taking out the garbage, or is this going to be a more involved process? What can you tell me about that?
I'd say this is easier than taking out the garbage. It's got a nice handle. It's pretty easy to move around. It's the shape and size of a conventional 5-gallon paint pail. But because this is filled with food waste and your paper towel waste, there's some volume being taken up by lighter material. So most buckets hover around 20 pounds. Of course, if you do have a household full of children that waste a lot of their food, it can get up to 30, 35 pounds pretty easily. But in those cases, it's a good chore to give out to your children. But for the most part, it's a pretty small platform. It's a pretty small bucket. It doesn't get that heavy. And you're able to keep it in your kitchen while you're using it, contribute to it as you cook and after your meals, and then just set it out on your front porch that once a week or that every other week.
And then when I'm getting another bucket back, I'm getting something that's clean and brand new, and I'm not dealing with, like, the leftovers, because I keep thinking about this as being something really messy, right? Like the idea, the picture I keep running through my own head is I go and make myself like a spaghetti for the kids, and now I've got a bunch of leftover spaghetti, and I don't want to smell that a week and a half later, or have somebody else's leftover spaghetti showing up at my porch. So every time that a bucket shows up, it's clean, right? I'm not going to get any kind of like, oh gosh, what house was this in before it got to mine, right?
I think that is one of the biggest perks of the type of service Evergreen Park selected. So this pail swap model, the bucket swap model, when we say we're doing the dirty work and the heavy lifting, we mean it. We're not dumping out your container into the back of a truck and giving you back this dirty, smelly container that you have to scrape out. And we're definitely not giving you someone else's dirty container. It's essentially reverse logistics. We're taking that full dirty container back to our facility. We're dumping it there. And then we're giving it to the sanitation team, where they wash it out and they throw it through an industrial sanitizer, sanitizing those buckets in the same way that a restaurant sanitizes foodware. So it's essentially a big dishwashing operation.
That's awesome. I'm glad you're doing all the work. Very cool. All right. So, Liam, it sounds interesting. I'm considering it. I mean, it's like one of those things where, like, I sit there and I go, okay, this is something else I could add into my life. Do I feel like it's worth it? On one hand, the fact that I'm getting some free compost back, this seems like it's simpler than what my neighbor's doing. Like I've always looked at that and said, oh, maybe I should start composting. And then I go, ah, do I want to? This is like the more sanitary, simple man's compost here, where I'm not really doing all the work. I'm just dumping food into a bucket, making my kid bring it out when it's time for you guys to pick it up, getting a clean bucket and moving on about my day. And I get to walk around and tell people I'm a composter. I kind of dig it.
That's right. It is the cleanest, easiest way to compost. And my second confession of this interview is that I grew up doing it in my backyard with no choice. And now that I'm subscribing to my own bucket service at home, I don't think I could ever go back. There's just something so rewarding about being able to scrape everything off my plate, anything that goes bad in the fridge, put it in that bucket, set it out, and not have to worry about anything after it gets picked up or after it gets set out. So it is a pretty great way of saying that you compost and actually composting without doing that dirty work. And if you really love it so much, a lot of our members, they'll host a yard sign in their front yard, letting their neighbors know that they compost. And it's a real conversation starter. It's pretty fun.
Well, if you want to learn more about Waste Not Compost, I know they have a general website, wastenotcompost.com. And then if you don't mind, Liam, the website that will be available starting on the 15th, by the time this show comes out, it will be up and running according to you. What is that one for Evergreen Park residents?
It is evergreenparkcompost.com. So that's Evergreen Park and then compost with an S at the end.com.
Liam Donnelly is the founder and CEO of Waste Not, who now has an agreement with Evergreen Park, another interesting service that is currently available to Evergreen Park residents and should be kicking off here later on this month in earnest. Thank you so much, Liam.
Thanks so much for having me.
Building relationships, supporting the community, and service. These are the things that Country Financial stands for. They're more than just an office you may pass by as you drive through Evergreen Park. They're neighbors who lend a helping hand and support the fabric of your community, including charitable organizations, sports, financial education, and civic organizations. And since Country is already your neighbor, they want to get together and chat. Call your local Country Financial representative, Mike Thauer, today at 708-425-1559 to talk about the things that are important to you and how he can help you protect them. It's now time for your EP podcast, Word on the Street, brought to you by Spoken Vine, Wine Bar and Bottle Shop, northeast corner of 95th and Kedzie. Get in there, try the food. Spectacular. They got shareables, they got the big meals, they got whatever you're looking for. Whether it's date night or getting together with friends, try some wines, go around the world, and if you find something you like, the Bottle Shop has it for you to take home. See more at SpokenVineWines.com. Evergreen Park Recreation Department has a lot of programs you're going to want to check out. The April Paint and Sip. Eileen Gorman is having this on Thursday, April 18th from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Community Center, 3450 West 97th Street. Get your friends together, enjoy a night of creativity, 21 and over, $40 includes all paint, supplies, wine, beer, and light apps. Tumbling is also kicking off on Thursdays, beginning April 18th, going through May 23rd at the Maple Wells Center at 3450 West Maple. 4 to 6-year-olds from 4:30 till 5:15 or 5:15 to 6 p.m. 7 to 9-year-olds 6 to 7 p.m. Again, on Thursdays, residents between $60 and $65, non-residents between $70 and $75, depending on the age. And if you want to do cheer tumbling, that's for ages 10 to 13 from 7 to 8 p.m. on Thursdays, $65 for residents, $75 for non-residents. Tickets are also available for pickup at the Evergreen Park Rec Department for Spring is in the Air, the concert. It features Rich Daniels and the City Light Orchestra vocalist and is sponsored by the Chicago Federation of Musicians. It's on April 28th. From 6 p.m. until 7:30 at St. Bernadette Church, 9343 South Francisco. The tickets are free with a limit of 4 per household. For details, for tickets, for questions, 708-229-3373. And mark your calendars for a community blood center blood drive, Saturday, April 27th from 9 till noon at the EP Senior Center at 9547 South Homan. That's the same location as the new Historical Commission Museum that we talked about on our last episode. Check that out anywhere podcasts can be found and always at theeppodcast.com. Schedule your blood donation at communityblood.org/donor or call 800-280-4102. Now, normally I'd have another great guest from right here in Evergreen Park at the end of this program, but every once in a while, a guest falls through. I'm not going to blame the guest. People have lives. That guest will be on in the next week or so. But I figure, what the heck, we've got some time here at the end of the show. Let's share a recent guest from another program here on the Broadcast Basement On Demand Radio Network. Because I also host, or co-host with my friend Ed, Sox in the Basement, the White Sox podcast for fans, by fans, and all White Sox, who are terrible, by the way. I mean, if you're following baseball, you know they're terrible, like historically terrible this year. Which gives us time to talk to this guest, who was recently on the show and wrote a book about Old Comiskey Park. Let's take a trip down memory lane and hear more about Last Comiskey. Joining me on the phone line right now, after the Last Comiskey documentary came out, you thought you had seen it all, and now there is a companion book. Our guest is author Ken Smoller. How are you, Ken?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for having me.
I don't know if everybody saw the documentary, but if they didn't, they should go and take a look at it if they're a Sox fan, especially if they're of a generation that spent time in that ballpark. I always loved Old Comiskey. I was sad when it went away. It is my favorite ballpark in all of ballpark history, and I have nothing but great memories as a child going to ball games at that park. What was your connection to it that got you to the point where, I know you were a contributor when it came to the documentary, but now writing this book, expanding the world of Last Comiskey just a little bit more, what was your experience that got you to this point?
Yeah, I've been a White Sox fan really since the crib. I had a red White Sox hat on my head when I was in my my crib, and was a Sox fan all my life. I got to experience Comiskey Park for about 14 years, I guess. And during the final season, it was after I'd become a real avid photographer during high school and college. I was a college photographer at the University of Michigan on the student newspaper, the Michigan Daily. And during the last season, I really felt that I wanted to preserve for my own memories, but wasn't sure if anyone else was doing it, every nook and cranny of Comiskey Park. I took a couple days off of my summer job while I was a freshman and sophomore summer, and took my camera and walked all around the park multiple times, outside, inside, the concourses, et cetera, and took photos of just every aspect of the park. In addition to that, I was able to get a press pass for one game and got some of the behind-the-scenes photos as well, such as manager Jeff Torborg in his locker room office. I was able to get that photo and a few others. And when all was said and done, I had hundreds of photos of Old Comiskey Park just gathering dust in negative boxes in my storage. And I contributed a lot of those for the documentary, but felt like Sox fans and baseball fans alike would really enjoy seeing what Comiskey Park looked like. Not just the ones who were there, but even more so, the people who weren't there that were too young, under the age of, I guess, about 40 years old, who couldn't experience the great ballpark and see what it was like. And maybe even more so, parts of the park that they didn't see very often, and sort of the panoramic photos that many of them have seen.
One of the parts of the ballpark that I always think of immediately whenever I think of that ballpark is the area behind the scoreboard. You don't think that there's even something back there when you see pictures, but I remember as a kid, the way the ramps crisscrossed, and it would be like during a game, especially if it was a bad game, but during a game, it was like the original kid zone. Like people were like jumping from one ramp to another ramp. And there were these little hidden areas back there in the back of the ballpark. Is there a spot that you found interesting, intriguing, that you think about all the time when you think of that ballpark?
You hit the nail on the head, because when I was old enough to leave my seat and wander around with my little camera, the first place I aimed myself towards was that center field area. And those ramps were just mesmerizing. You could watch the game from a completely different angle. You could get from the upper deck to the lower deck to the bleachers and that area. One of the things that was really cool that I got to see and photograph was there was this really weird statue in deep center field that was a statue and a little fountain. I don't know what the purpose of it was and what it was honoring, but there are all these little nooks and crannies in that corner. And I included a lot of those photos in the book because I too was captivated by it. You also would see political type signs. When I say political, baseball politics. I have a photo in there of a Nellie Fox in the Hall of Fame sign. People used to take bed sheets and mark them up and walk around, and whatever mission they had for the White Sox or baseball, they would parade them in those passageways that connected you from the lower deck to the upper deck. And it was just a place like nowhere else in any ballpark I've ever been to. That whole center field area was really what caught my attention as a baseball fan. You know, obviously the scoreboard was mesmerizing with Bill Veeck's monster coming up in 1960 and then converted to a modern version in 1982. What kid wouldn't love seeing fireworks after home runs combined with Nancy Faust playing Na 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 and all the fans cheering? Even if it was a crowd of 5,000 fans, it was always loud there. And it was always a little mysterious in that center field triangle.
So the foreword to this book is written by Ozzie Guillen. And, you know, Ozzie strikes me as a guy who's not only very opinionated, but he talks really fast and he kind of jumps from, one subject to another subject. He also has a very good baseball mind. I mean, let's think about this. He's the manager that took this team to a world championship, and they'll never take that away from him. What is it like as an author, as a writer, a professional, getting a forward from Ozzy? Is he a pretty good writer?
Well, you have to clean up some swears here and there, obviously. One of the things he did was he shared a lot of memories of his family and what it was like to take his kids. I've got a photo in there of Ozzy Jr. and Oney from when they were probably maybe 5 and 7 years old, playing with Ozzy in the outfield. And one of his strongest memories was just what it was like to raise a family in Comiskey Park. He got to do it for a handful of years at Old Comiskey and then at New Comiskey. And it was really, you know, heartwarming to hear what it was like. I mean, I was always jealous as a little kid watching those guys out in the field. And their experience was just tremendous. And Ozzy talked about that, but he also just talked about what the park was like in terms of all the employees that worked there, the Andy Frayne ushers, the beer men, the same ones that would say hi to him every day. It felt like it was his family. He was there for so long. He was also the bridge from Old Comiskey to New Comiskey. He played 5 years at Old Comiskey and, of course, played a number of years and managed at New Comiskey. So more than anyone else, he really understands both of the ballparks. And one of the things that's really interesting about Ozzy is, if you recall, he did not like the old ballpark and couldn't wait to get out of it at the time. And then now, looking back on it, he talks very nostalgically about his memories of Old Comiskey. And after seeing all the other ballparks that came in the dozen years after New Comiskey, he really looked back on the first few years of New Comiskey unfavorably, realizing there was maybe a little bland and a little lacking compared to the other new ballparks. And he wrote about that as well. So he is, filled with more information than almost any White Sox person that's alive today.
There's an intimacy to that ballpark. When you went to a game there, you were right up on the field. And you are much closer to the action, and there was just more of a feeling that it was you and the team taking on the other team. And then, of course, the characters that walked around it, right? Like, I've never seen Ribby and Rhubarb ever since they tore that place down. I wonder if there's a secret spot where they're laid to rest.
I think I know where they are.
You do?
I have heard rumors, and I'm going, we have a big book launch on May 16th at the Chicago History Museum. And part of my plan is I need to go to the Mascot Hall of Fame in Whiting, Indiana. I have heard rumors that they are on display there. I mean, you need to check that out.
I was worried they were buried underneath the parking lot when they tore down the stadium. That's what I was worried about.
Listen, if we all remember the days, Sox fans would have preferred that. They did not get well received by Sox fans. And I think I probably learned a lot of swears from what Sox fans were yelling at old Ribby and Rhubarb. I've got a couple of great photos. I actually have a photo of them with Ozzy in the book. I kind of liked them as a kid. You know, I always was jealous of the Philly Fanatic and the Chicken, the San Diego Chicken. But they did not get well received at Old Comiskey Park. And then, of course, there's Andy the Clown. You know, some people loved him. Some people could not stand how he was always making noise. He was a controversial figure, but he's in the book as well. I've got a great photo of Andy from the last night game. I was lucky enough to attend the last night and the last day game and was able to get a number of photos of those two real momentous days in White Sox and Chicago history.
And a far more talented part of the ballpark, who I'm sure you've drawn a lot from, is former guest of this show and good friend of it, Nancy Faust, who has been in that ballpark for so long, and she is a plethora of information. I would imagine she's all over this book.
Yeah, she is all over this book. Every single interviewee seemed to talk about her from the movie. And in addition to that, I have a real heartwarming story in the afterword that I include about when my son, who was, I think, about 12 at the time, we were visiting Phoenix, Arizona, and Nancy and I had been exchanging messages on Twitter, and I was asking her for some interviews for this book. And she said, why don't you just come on over to the house, bring your son. And she invited us, welcomed him into her home. My son got to meet her. She gave us a little impromptu concert in her donkey barn in the back. It was the most magical experience hearing Nancy's organ play in a little cinder block room, the same songs that I used to hear at Comiskey Park as a kid. She is just a remarkable human being and really represents everything about that ballpark. fan-oriented entertainment, a little bit of levity, a little bit of sarcasm, some irreverence as well. You know, a lot of her songs poked fun at the visiting players in a cheeky way that she kind of jokes about that she couldn't get away with today. But she is, one of the most important people in White Sox history in a lot of ways, because a lot of fans associate their experience with White Sox games with Nancy.
Ken Smoller has written Last Comiskey, the book that follows the documentary. I know you can pre-order it right now. It's coming out officially at the end of the month. Ken, how do people get the book?
Yeah, sure. Visit the website for the book. It is lastcomiskeybook.com. That's lastcomiskeybook.com. It has over 400 photos, possibly I think about 450 photos of old Comiskey, as well as all sorts of aspects of White Sox history. I really hope Sox fans enjoy it. It is, like I said, coming out at the end of April, and then we have this big book launch, which is free to all Sox fans. And there's information on that website as well about how to get to the book launch, which will include some former Sox players. So it's lastcomiskeybook.com.
Ken, congrats on the book, and I expect it to be a big success because I know that documentary had some legs, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
It's the EP Podcast, all things Evergreen Park. It's the EP Podcast, Evergreen Park.